Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, September 16th. This is the last Saturday night of summer 2017. The next time we do a Saturday night or weekend show, it'll be the first few days of autumn. So this is, we say goodnight, or we say goodbye, I should say, to summer, or at least the last Saturday night of summer 2017. Today we'll be catching up with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. Barry wrote a fascinating article that has been getting a lot of circulation, as they like to say, on the internet. And he looks at the motivations or the reasons behind President Trump doing what he did with the Democrats and what he's doing with the Republicans. And we're going to hear that discussion tonight. I'd like you to hear what Barry has to say. I thought it was one of the finest articles that he's written, and he's obviously written quite a few. We're also going to take a look at 2018. It's early, but yet it's not early. And there are some different theories going around, and I've got one that I want to share with Barry tonight. Bernie Sanders is driving the Democrats further and further to the left, and I think this is actually dividing the Democrats. I'd like to get Barry's reaction to my thoughts. And demographics, you know, that was the, as they like to say, that was the settled science of political analysis, I guess, until election night 2016. And the gentleman, John Judis, J-U-D-I-S, who came up with that theory of demographics is sort of taking it back right now. And he's saying, no, not so fast. It's not all about demographics. There are other factors that go into this. And he definitely comes down or makes a very clear statement to the Democrat Party that unless they cut out this identity politics, they're not going to be able to penetrate or win back many of the voters that they lost to President Trump. Let me say hello to Barry Castleman. How is everything up in the Twin Cities, Barry?
Well, we're starting just to, we've had a warm spell, but it's going to get cool. So we're coming to the end of our summer, too.
Yeah, it's interesting around here. Today was very much like summer, very much of a summer day, the kind of thing you associate with a Texas summer, 90s. But the last 10 days or so was actually very nice. It was 85, 86. Of course, everything is relative. 85, 86 might be real hot somewhere else. But 85, 86
pretty hot up
here was actually, yeah, that would be hot just about anywhere. But here it was very pleasant in September. Well, the politics has certainly been interesting. We celebrate here in a matter of days the eighth month anniversary, or if that's the right word, 8 months of President Trump, let me put it that way. And he's had an extremely, what I would describe, maybe turbulent, maybe exciting, maybe chaotic. There's all kinds of language I guess you can use to describe President Trump. And one of the most interesting things that happened, Barry, these last couple of weeks is that President Trump apparently made a deal with the Democrats over DACA, and then he said he didn't. He went to the Democrats to work with them. And you have a great theory in this article that you wrote. And I'd like you to share with us what you said, because I you were right on this. In fact, I had a gut feeling, Barry, 10 days or so ago that I felt like you did in that article. And then when I read your analysis, I said, man, I think I was right, because if you believe it, then I'm pretty sure that I was right, Barry. So share with us the article that you just wrote about President Trump, the Democrats, and the GOP.
Well, I called it shock therapy, and I think my point is this. President Trump is not an ideologue in the usual sense, and he is a man who spent his entire life as a businessman making deals. He's very oriented towards getting things accomplished. Now, you may not, some people may not agree with what his goals are, his agenda. That's perfectly okay. But he does have an agenda, and he made that agenda very clear during the election, as did his political party, the party that nominated him and actually forms the party behind his administration. Then he took office. He's a bit controversial, as I pointed out. He's a political disruptor, so he's really disrupting the political establishment in America. But that's what he said he was going to do, so there shouldn't be any surprise. But when he expected the leadership in the House and the Senate to start to pass his agenda, which was, of course, their agenda too, including most notably the repeal and replacement of Obamacare. And they have not succeeded. Not only in that, but then they seem to be saying that they're stalemated on tax reform and tax cuts. So I think the president, not being a Washington insider, not being a member of the establishment, and not as was charged, I think legitimately, that he doesn't really know how the Senate works, per se. He just said, well, I'm going to get the job done here. And if it's necessary, I'll go to the Democrats. But it isn't that he's going to suddenly become a Democrat or he's suddenly going to change his political spots. It's that he is basically, in a manner of speaking, fired a shot across the bow of his own party in the Congress, basically saying, if you don't get something done, and I've been, and you know, you and I have discussed this, you know, I've been writing about it for actually several months, that time is long past for the Republican Congress to start fulfilling their promises and start passing legislation. Now, there wasn't very much legislation under the Obama years, and that stalemate the country got tired of. I think that's why Donald Trump was elected president in a year that he wasn't supposed to win, because the country, the voters, the majority of voters in the Electoral College states decided that it was time for some kind of a change, even though they had their questions about Donald Trump, as we all do and did. But he said, I'm going to start working with the Democratic leadership to see what kind of a deal we can make to get these things done. And I think there was an immediate reaction in the media. First of all, the liberal media said, oh, he's abandoning his party. And the conservative, very ultra-conservative party media said he's failing to keep his promises. He isn't what he said he was. In reality, he is what he said he was. And he's simply saying the bottom line here, excuse me, I'm years behind, in 2017 is it's time to start legislating and making changes in the way we're doing business in Washington, D.C., on a whole form of issues, not just Obamacare, not just taxes, but education, defense, a lot of things. And so what he is basically doing is saying to Republicans, I'm not up in 2018. I don't have to go to the voters until 2020. You're up in 2018. And if you don't have anything to point to that you've accomplished, you're going to lose.
Right. Now let me ask you.
And so that is the basis of my.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That is the basis of my article, was that Trump isn't doing something shocking or surprising. He's doing he's providing a little shock therapy to his own party.
Right.
And he's also saying, and by the way, I think what he did was basically welcomed, not only by many independents and Democrats, but even by Republicans. And it's, according to the polls that we've just seen in the last few days, this has not hurt him with his own party. It's only hurt him with the establishment leadership in the House and the Senate, and those few members who aren't cooperating to get some legislation done. Now, as I pointed out in my article, most of the members of Congress, the senators and the House members, are voting with the president and are trying to get something done, but there remains a block in the Senate and another block, the so-called Freedom Caucus, in the House, which are blocking getting something done. And they're basically
right.
saying, we want a pure bill. We want something so intellectually and theoretically pure that we can feel good about it. But life
right.
isn't that way. There's always compromises. There's always modifications.
Right.
So that's what I said. And as you said, I've gotten a very nice reaction from many. And I'm sure the leadership in the House and the Senate aren't pleased, but that's their problem.
Exactly, but I think you're right on, and because you're addressing what I always thought that was his motivation, to shake things up a little bit, especially within the Republican Party. But let me ask you a question, and this kind of ties into 2018 a little bit. If I'm a Democrat, like Mr. Manchin, the lady in Missouri, or the gentleman in Indiana, the gentleman in Montana, the lady in South Dakota or North Dakota, if I'm one of those Democrats, and I know that I'm going to get a pretty good Republican running against me in a very Republican state, and I know that whoever runs against me is going to bring up Obamacare, the fact that I didn't vote for it. So if I'm a Democrat in one of those districts, why wouldn't I want to get very close to President Trump and try to help President Trump, let's say, repeal Obamacare? Why wouldn't I try to work with President Trump so that I can at least go back to my state and say, I got something done? I was not just looking out for the Democrat Party. This was not very popular in West Virginia or in Montana. And saying, I worked with President Trump. I got some things done. I was thinking about you. I wasn't thinking about my party. Why wouldn't those Democrats act that way? They don't seem to be acting that way, Barry, and that confuses me. What do you think of that, Barry?
Well, it's very difficult. The Democrats, one thing I give them credit for, they, on both the House and the Senate under Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, they exercised a lot of discipline. And they kept their house together. They kept their members together, and they did not tolerate any rogue votes. There was no John McCain, no Susan Collins in the Democratic Party. Now facing an election, the president has, I think, very shrewdly gone to talk to Mr. Manchin and Mrs. Heitkamp. I don't know about the lady in Missouri. She's got a problem, but she's, one thing about Mrs. Heitkamp and Mr. Manchin is they're actually moderate Democrats, the kind of centrist moderate Democrats, kind that I like personally. So it's not a problem for them to make certain votes, but I think in Montana and in Missouri, it's a little more difficult. Because the candidates themselves are pretty liberal, but that lies, I think, ahead, because I think we want to see how this strategy of the president's going to work. Time is, this is already September. We're almost at October. We're almost at December, and January begins the political season in earnest. By that time, most of these Senate candidates, these Democratic incumbents, are going to have serious opponents, I think, in virtually every race where the races are competitive. So I think this we're leading up to a moment. But the time is, as former Speaker Newt Gingrich points out, we're running out of time in terms of getting tax reform, because if you're going to lower taxes, you've got to make it happen soon enough so that it will have some impact by the time we not only get an election, but it needs to have impact on the economy. It needs time. Things don't happen overnight in the economy. And I think we have we're running out of time. I think there's a kind of a pincer movement here between the president and the malcontents. I think that I don't even know exactly what's going to happen. I do think in the end, self-preservation prevails. And what I mean by that is, I think these Republicans who have been not voting, I mean, Susan Collins is not going to change her vote because she represents a state where her vote is very popular, even though she's not voting with the Republicans, even though she is a Republican. But I think that's not true in other states, and I think we've got some at least two Republican incumbents, Mr. Flake, Mr. Heller, Mr. Flake from Arizona, Mr. Heller in Nevada, who probably are not going to be renominated by their own party, much less win re-election, because they have decided to not only oppose but very publicly criticize the president. I don't think that's a very smart move. I'm not saying the president cannot be criticized. You and I have both been critical on specific things. I probably more than you, but some of the things he says I think don't make much sense. But in terms of what he's doing and in terms of the agenda he has, I think the time has come for action. And I think we will get some. And if not, I think the president will continue to deal with the Democrats, the moderate conservative Democrats, and the Democrats will try and get, so every side will try and get the best deal they can. But the bottom line will be, sometime at the end of this year, the beginning of next year, the Congress will start to pass some legislation. Because we're overdue.
Yeah. As you say, you know, time is running out, and I think you're right about self-preservation. I think some of these people obviously want to get reelected, or at least, you know, in the House, I think the House is probably more competitive, or the Democrats have a better chance of winning the House than they do the Senate, but you never know. A lot of things can go wrong. Let me take a little break, Barry, and then we'll come back. I want to talk about Bernie Sanders' demographics and continue talking about President Trump. We'll be right back.
Carlos Quevez, Harpist, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
My good friend Carlos on Saturday nights, you know, this week we started playing a little musical segment. We obviously always like to hear from Carlos, but a good friend of mine, Juanjo Casals, has a musical band, a very popular musical band down in Uruguay. He and his brothers and his sons play what can best be described as Spanish rock, I guess. That would be sort of like the era of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, that time frame. And they have a band down in Uruguay, and he sent me some of his music, and it's absolutely fantastic. We heard a little bit of it as we were going in that musical segment. So we're going to try to feature a little bit of Juanjo as well over the next few months. He's a wonderful person, as well as obviously a very talented guitar player and vocalist down in South America. Let's get back to our friend Barry Castleman. Barry, I want to bring up a lot of these topics are related, of course. So when we're talking about 2018, I have a theory, and then we'll talk about Bernie Sanders in a minute, and I want to get your thoughts on demographics. But I have a feeling that the Republicans are going to do a lot better in 2018 than the usual cycle. The cycle, of course, is for the party, the president's party, to lose seats. I think the exception was 2002 when President Bush actually picked up a couple of seats in that election. But usually the president takes a beating at midterms. It may happen. I'm not denying that possibility. It could very well happen. But I think given the state of the Democrat Party these days, the fact that the party seems to be tearing itself up, you got the Bernie Sanders wing, you've got whatever is left of a moderate wing trying to survive against Bernie Sanders. This week, Bernie Sanders introduced Medicare for All, which is probably unsustainable economically. And it just seems to me that the one thing at the end of the day that could very well save the Republican majorities in 2018 is the Democrats, Barry, and of course, Bernie Sanders, who apparently has become the head of the party, even though he's not even a Democrat, Barry.
Well, of course, you are more of a partisan than I am. You are always been a self-avowed conservative and Republican, and I understand that, and I'm not a member of either party, but although I have generally written some things which favors the chances of Republicans in recent years, I think that there's a distinct possibility. I think your theory, I think we're at a turning point here where we will find out soon enough whether your theory actually is valid or not. There's a lot of things that could happen. The stock market, if it continues to go up, is going to be very good news for Republicans. If the stock market goes way down, that'll be very good news for the Democrats. And the market will reflect it's the anticipation of where the economy is going. One of the reasons why people like Speaker Gingrich and others, and myself included, have felt that it was important for the Congress, whether they be Republicans or Democrats, to enact tax reform, especially tax cuts, is because, you know, the time is running out when the economy, I mean, the economies go in cycles, and we have been on a recent upturn, and in order for that upturn to continue, we need to rejuvenate the economy with, now there's a lot of cash out there. There's also a lot of cash held by American corporations in foreign countries, and we could legislate it so that money could come back without a penalty, and that would be an immense infusion. That would send the economy soaring. And so I think, and of course, Donald Trump is the exception that proves all the rules of the past. I mean, he is such an anomaly, and he's such a disruptor, so that your theory that, in fact, the final results the next November may surprise us is not without some basis. On the other hand, I have to caution that it could be even worse than expected, as I have written, that it could even lose control of the Senate, even though it does not look mathematically possible. But it is. But they would have to lose a lot of seats. But that would be a voter reaction to Republicans who failed to keep their promises. So I think, you know, your theory could be prescient, and a year from now we could be patting you on the back for your foresight, for seeing that it was going to be a contrarian election. I'm usually a contrarian, so I certainly entertain the possibility. But I think we have got to get some more facts, some more realities under our belt. We have to deal also with the international situation, which is constantly explosive, not only in Europe and the Middle East, but also, of course, in the Far East and North Korea. That has to be resolved in some way or another. So there are many ifs, ands, and buts that stand in the way. But I think it's possible. But it's also possible, and I have to be honest, it's also possible that the election in 2018 could be a catastrophe for the Republicans.
Right. It's what I said. I mean, this could either be 2006 when President Bush lost both the House and the Senate, or it could be 2002. We don't know yet. I agree with you. We don't know yet. It's too early to tell. But My bringing this up or putting this theory on the table, it's not so much that I'm happy with the Republican Party. I mean, I am extremely unhappy with the Republican Party. I mean, look, as we said a few weeks ago, nobody defended Senator McCain more than I did. I mean, I can remember going to Republican functions here in Texas where people were really down on John McCain, and this is a few years ago. And I would stand up and say, no, stay with McCain. He is the right man. And the night that Senator McCain voted the way he did on health care, I mean, I was so disgusted. It wasn't easy for me to criticize McCain, particularly given his medical condition. I mean, I felt that, I felt uncomfortable criticizing a man who was in very serious health. But at the same time, I was very disappointed. I am thoroughly disgusted with the Republicans. I mean, I'm not, I am a partisan, you're exactly right, but I'm not happy with the Republicans at all. I think they've shown no eagerness or no ability to lead. They've shown no, I mean, look, you were saying about the discipline that the Democrats kept. That's, discipline is often a result of consequences. I mean, if you don't play, we're going to take away your committee role or whatever, so those Democrats were not disciplined just because they wanted to be. There were some threats, I'm sure, they were told under the table. So it's one of the things that we're going to be talking a great deal over the next 10 to 12 months, and that is what happens in 2018. But I would like to go to Bernie Sanders for a second, Barry, and get your reaction to this, because I really find that Bernie Sanders is, or Senator Sanders, is dividing the Democrat Party when he comes out with that kind of a proposition, because a lot of Democrats are going to have a very hard time, being a Sanders Democrat in 2018. I mean, those Democrats we were talking about in red states, I don't think any of them is going to be carrying the Bernie Sanders flag, Barry. So I think Bernie Sanders is doing the Democrats a great disservice, Barry, and he's not even a Democrat. That's the most interesting part about it, Barry.
Well, before we get to Senator Sanders, I want to point out one thing that everyone should keep an eye on in the next few days and weeks. Senator Cassidy, I believe from Louisiana, who is a medical doctor, and I think he's the chairman of some subcommittee which deals with Obamacare, has actually come up with one last try to repeal Obamacare and replace it. And believe it or not, Senator McCain has signed on. So he will not be voting against. And according to Senator Cassidy, he has about 47 or 48 votes right now, and he's got 2 to 4 votes to go. And he might even get one of those Democratic senators that we discussed. So that's a chance, because, the House has already passed a bill. So the Senate could finally pass something, and then that would change a lot of the pressure, because it would mean they finally did something. Bill is not going to be a perfect bill. It's not going to be pure, but keep an eye on that. He may fail, but I met Senator Cassidy when he was running for office. He's a very impressive man. Mm-hmm. As I said, he's a medical doctor. He's really knowledgeable and a gutsy guy, and if he's getting optimistic, then I think there's reason to hope. Now, coming back to Senator Sanders.
If I may just one quick second, Barry. Let me just put this in, because you're talking about the idea of not repealing Obamacare, but simply sending the money back to the states, which is what Senator Graham was explaining the other day. He makes a lot of sense. He says, look, we're not going to get 60 votes to repeal it, but we may be able to send the money back to the state, so we don't formally repeal it, but we put it out of business nevertheless. I really like that bill, by the way. I think that bill of putting Obama, in a sense, creating 50 Obamacares or splitting Obamacare into 50 states and saying to every state, you run it, it's your business, you run it, I actually like that a lot. I mean, I always thought that should have been the option from the very beginning. That you let the states run it. So I hope that passes. And if I may say something about that just very quickly, it may be easier to get a Joe Manchin or Heidi, the lady from
Heitkamp.
I can't ever. Heitkamp from Heitkamp. Is it North or South Dakota? From North or South?
North Dakota.
North Dakota. I think it may be easier to get those two and perhaps even the fellow from Montana or the fellow from Indiana. I think the lady from Missouri, by the way, my prediction is she's not running for re-election. She'll figure it out real quickly here in the next 6 months that she cannot defeat a very popular Republican there. But that's another topic. But if you can get two or three Democrats to jump on this, because you're not repealing it, you're simply sending it back to the state, then I think it might be the best solution of all, Barry.
Right. Well, it could be. As I say, keep an eye on it. Let's wait, watch developments. Now, coming back to Senator Sanders, when he says Medicare for all, he's basically calling for not only a single-payer system, but basically socialized medicine. And as has been pointed out by anyone that I have any respect for in terms of analysis of the math, the numbers, the bill is appealing in words on paper, but in fact, in reality, can't possibly make any sense without a huge, huge deficits that would alter the American economy. It would send us into an economic tailspin, I believe. This, however, has a certain appeal to the left wing of the Democratic Party, and it's not something brand new. Senator Sanders did not invent this. They've been waiting for the time when they could push it forward. Something like it was proposed by Hillary Clinton when she was the first lady in the beginning of the Bill Clinton administration. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, if that's the rallying cry through which the Democratic Party is going to make a comeback in 2018 and 2020, I don't see it. I mean, anything is possible, but I don't think the American public is going to buy it because it doesn't make any sense. The numbers are simply not there. It's a very ineffective way of running health care. It sounds good because it's health care for everybody. Everybody, and it's free, but of course it's not free. That's the point.
Well, Barry, you may know, that's right. Well, you may know, I'm sure you do, that a few months ago in California, which is where you would expect universal health care to be the most popular in the country, maybe Oregon, Washington, those very liberal legislatures out there, but they tried it in California, and they came to the conclusion that universal health care would be bigger than the entire budget. They would have to basically do away with everything else and just have one government program for healthcare. So it kind of failed out there, and it will fail wherever it is. It's simply not doable. And it's, I don't want to knock our Canadian friends because I love Canada and there's very nice people up there. But as a Canadian friend said to me several times, you know, the reason our socialized medicine works is because 90% of us live 100 miles from the United States, and we can just come over to the United States and get that operation that we have to wait 6 months for up here. And there's a lot of truth to that, although there are some good things about their system. I'm not knocking it. I just brought that up. But it's going to fail. It's going to fail. But more important than that, I just don't think this is something, as I mentioned, and do you agree with me that this will divide the Democrat Party immensely, because you now have a Bernie Sanders basically with an idea that I don't think every Democrat is on board, Barry.
Well, I don't know how it will divide the Democratic Party. I think because the Democratic Party has been moving ever so gradually, with some exceptions, to the left, I think it's less likely to divide the Democratic Party as it is to divide the Democratic candidates, including their candidate for president, from the American voters, especially independent voters. I don't think independent voters are very interested in socialized medicine, and certainly Republicans are not. And so the Democrats may actually, I mean, there's always the more moderate figures, such as we've mentioned, in the Democratic Party, just as we have on the Republican side, Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe, and a few other more liberal Democrats, Republicans. But the fact is, the Democratic Party has been sort of slinking off to the left here, and its reaction to the loss in 2016 could be the wrong reaction, politically speaking. I'm not going to – people can strongly disagree with me about whether it's right or wrong, but certainly the wrong decision politically, in that it takes away the opportunity for the Democrats to make a political comeback, because in order to win, you have to have votes. And if you're turning people away, whole groups of people in the electorate who are potentially your sympathetic, and if you do something as extreme as single payer or Medicare for all or socialized medicine, then you have a political problem. And I don't think the country is – now, I don't know what's going to happen 20 years from now and 40 years from now. That is beyond my ken. But what I can say is that in the next year and the next 2 years, which lead to 18 and 20, the country is not going to, wrap its arms around single-payer, Medicare for all, socialized medicine. And a party that throws its whole weight behind that is, I think, making a fundamental mistake. But, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
No, but I think you're right on that, because I just don't think – I think most of the people who vote, and we have to emphasize that, who vote, I think are smart enough to realize that socialized medicine sounds a heck of a lot better than it really is. I am not against I am not against providing subsidies or helping people below a certain income to buy insurance. And I certainly, in other words, I believe that people should have access to insurance. I just don't believe, or healthcare. I just don't believe that socialized medicine is the best way to do it. But let me bring you to another topic, and this is very fascinating to me, because I wrote a post about this over at the American Thinker this week, and that is this whole issue of demographics. And I have to, in the interest of full disclosure, admit that I had bought into this theory quite a bit. And I was one of those who was warning the Republican Party that they had to develop better relations with Hispanics, because eventually there were going to be enough Hispanics to move an election. The whites would still be a majority, but the Hispanics were a growing and growing minority and could impact elections here, even here in Texas. But then comes 2016 and the current state of the Democrat Party with identity politics. And this week, the gentleman, or one of the two gentlemen, the other one was Ray Teixeira, who's a professor at the University of Texas, who wrote that book, The Emerging Democrat Majority. Now, all of a sudden, at least Mr. Judas is taking it back a little bit and saying, not so fast, because the issue here is he thinks that as long as the Democrat Party is the way it is, focusing exclusively on identity and gender and race, that they're not going to win the elections just because there are more Hispanics today than there were 10 years ago, Barry. I think that's really an important lesson, if I could put it that way. At least Mr. Judas is learning the right lesson of 2016, Barry.
Right. Now, he hasn't changed his political views one bit. He still remains a leftist, I think a democratic socialist or a social democrat. I don't know what the category is. It isn't that important. He's a thoughtful guy, but he's a man of the left. And I have never found his political commentary to be very astute over time. And when he put that forward, I must tell you that unlike you, I did not buy it, because certain things are inevitable over long periods of time. The Chinese have 1.2 billion people. The people of India are 1.2 billion people. We are 300 million. So eventually, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, there will be a different world economy based on their market needs. That's just inevitable. I don't think that's really arguable. I don't know what political forms those will take, and I don't certainly don't know what that means in terms of freedom and liberty and democracy. But in certain terms, those are inevitable. So there is no question that there are people we describe as minority people in America whose numbers are growing, and that is, if you were to take that literally, as Mr. Tejera and Mr. Judas did, their prediction was inevitable. The fact is, however, that identity politics is not wearing well, and that people who come to America, for the most part, whether they be even Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, Jewish Americans, Italian Americans, they tend over time to become Americans, and they still keep their identity. They're certainly their religious identity, their ethnic identity, and they should. And that's perfectly, that's admirable, not just logical. But the fact is that the game of using of the kind of cynical use of identity politics that the Democratic Party has indulged in very recently, and which I think was the prospect for Mr. Tejera and Judas's theory, is not working out. And I think that we don't, I mean, we're living in the most extraordinary time in terms of velocity of change, Silvio. And in therefore, trying to predict beyond a couple of years, certainly beyond a generation, is very perilous. And I don't think anyone, right. I'm certainly not that smart, and I don't know if anybody right. is that smart, who can pull that off. I just wrote a piece right. about the famous British writer who wrote Animal Farm, George Orwell, in 1984.
Right.
He was that rare specimen who could see 30, 40, 50 years ahead, and he saw it in terms of human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I wrote that even though we thought that fascism and communism were gone, and that the world, the kind of frightening totalitarianism that we saw in political correctness in 1984, the danger was gone, and now we discover it's not gone; it's reemerged. So I'm very cautious about making long. I mean, you and I can do that's useful, I believe, Silvio, is talk about what's going to happen next year, what's going to happen maybe in 3 years, 2 years, two, 3 years. And then beyond that, circumstance, because we don't know what's going to happen with the international situation, with the economy. Things are always under flux and change, and we don't know what those things are, because one
right.
thing about history always seems to surprise us.
That's right.
Almost always.
Well, you know, Barry, I can tell you just our last two presidents, number 44, Mr. Obama, number 45, Mr. Trump, both of them I would have never predicted a year before they were elected.
Of course.
So, but you're right, things change. But in all fairness to Mr. Judas, and I want to make sure that I didn't misrepresent him, he you're right, he's still a liberal, very much of a Democrat, very much of a of a left, left of center Democrat. I think that what he was saying, or when Mr. Tejera and Mr. Judas wrote that book years ago, I think they were basically just looking at numbers. They were saying there are going to be more Hispanics, therefore this consequence will happen. But I don't think they were, both of them were calling for identity politics or predicting that. And Mr. Judas now is very clearly on arguing that identity politics is not working for the Democrats. There was another very liberal professor in the last couple of weeks who wrote a very fine article as well. And in fact, I think he's come out with a book making the exact same case that identity politics is not working at all. In fact, I would argue it's working against the Democrats, because it's really making a lot of people very angry in the United States. A lot of, when people call you a racist just because you believe certain things, I think that has a way of turning off people rather than bringing people together. I think Professor Alan Dershowitz was on television this morning, And he was saying that both extremes, and he's right about this, both extremes are basically out of control, both the extreme left and the extreme right. And they're making it very difficult for people to have a conversation. People
right.
cannot sit down and that's a problem, Barry. When people cannot talk honestly about problems, you cannot fix them, Barry.
Right. And I have respect for Mr. Judas and for Mr. Dershowitz, who were both liberals. And I think, what was it the president said after Charlottesville? I mean, it got distorted. He mishandled it perhaps a little bit. But all he was trying to say was that the two extremes, there were extremes on the left and the right, and they were both responsible for things getting out of hand. And the media took one side, and that made it more difficult. But we're going to have more of the same. You know, at some point, it will probably take another election for the media to finally realize that their strategy trying to decertify Donald Trump and decertify the 2016 election just doesn't work. It isn't working. And just doesn't work. But it will take that because they're mm-hmm. not going away. They're not stopping. It's not stopping.
No.
The only thing that made them pause were those terrible and unfortunate and tragic storms, which they had to cover
mm-hmm.
because it was much more
right.
important than the foibles of Twitter. But
mm-hmm.
the fact of the matter is that they now will come back and they're going to come. We're in for a spectacle.
That's. I think you're exactly right, and we hope that we can spend many hours with you here over the next 12 months covering all of this. As always, thank you for your time. Congratulations on the Yankees. I think we can safely say the Yankees will be one of the two wild cards. And all I can hope for is that they play the Rangers and that the game is in Yankee Stadium. So I think you and I will have a lot of fun with that. But
well, I
for
wish
sure,
for your sake, I wish that the Rangers make it too. And the Yankees are not for certain. As always, the unexpected can happen.
Yes.
But it does look good
That's
for
right.
now.
Oh, it looks excellent. I would argue that it looks very good. But you're right. You're right. Any historian of baseball remembers the 1964 Philadelphia Phillies, who blew a 6-game lead with I think 10 or 12 to go. So it can be it can change, and that's the beauty of baseball. Have a great day, Barry. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope we do
Thank
this
you.
Very soon. And again, congratulations on the great work at Prairie Editor, and I thought this last article you wrote was just absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. Good night.
All right, thank you so much. Good night, Barry. Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. We always encourage you to check out the Prairie Editor. We have a link on the website. I am a subscriber to the Prairie Editor. It's a wonderful resource. I always, you know, Barry sends out these updates of the articles that he publishes, and I always read it. I always read them because they're so good. They're so interesting. Barry obviously has a knack for politics and for understanding politics. He's been covering elections for a long time, and he's got that ability to analyze things as he did with that article about Mr. Trump and the Senate Democrats and the Senate Republicans. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.